Man kann sein Glück aussehen, es hegen und pflegen, langsam wachsen sehen, darauf warten.
Oder man reißt es einfach auf.
Die Lose zum Aufreißen von Lotto Bayern. Das Bayernlos, das Bayernglück, das Extragehalt oder das Megagehalt. Reiß dein Glück auf. Nur in deiner Lotto-Annahmestelle. Lotto Bayern, nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Infos unter biök.de.
In a small town, small, as in barely over 1,000 people living there, a new building is something that rarely, if ever, gets built. More than likely, if a new business is started or coming to the town, they'll buy an abandoned building and renovate it instead of having to purchase land and build from the literal ground up. The residents of the town usually are perfectly happy with that, because it helps keep their town small and secluded, and helps local building contractors like my father keep in business. So, when a rich couple that moved from the city settled in our town and wanted to open a new restaurant last summer, they opted to convert an old pier storehouse that sat upon the river which flowed through our town. And to show solidarity with our town and support local business, they hired my father's company to oversee the construction. My father's construction business wasn't very large at all. It was just him, me, Steve, and Walter. We're all sort of jack-of-all-trades kind of guys. However, there are a couple of guys in town that are very skilled in specific trades that were always willing to help my father at the drop of a hat if need be. With a crew like this, and a very customer-friendly atmosphere, combined with an incredible work ethic and high standards, mostly everyone in the whole county called my father's business when they needed work to be done. And the newcomers were no exception. Apparently, they'd done their research before they even moved from the city. The pier storehouse we were tasked into converting to a restaurant had a bit of a history in the town. At one point in the past, money flowed like water through the place due to its location on the river. Then one day, too far back in history that anyone living knows the real reason, the whole pier was abandoned. Boats no longer stopped there, and some sort of dark aura seemed to emanate from the place. The town suffered immensely from the loss of income, but we are hardy people and survived. We turned the place into the sleepy little town that it is today and has been for probably over 150 years. Today, the townsfolk still avoid the pier, but not because of a shady past or bad feeling coming from the place. The whole thing is ancient, and no repairs have been done in a long, long time. It's an unsafe place to be. Even putting a single foot on the rotting wood could have you falling through. Kids sometimes go to it at night and drink and smoke pot. I know I did. But besides that, the place is devoid of human activity or life. Even fishermen prefer to cast their rods from the riverbank rather than take a step onto the pier. This couple had really, really deep pockets, however, and the money that was offered to my father's business was too much to turn down. So, on the first day of June, in the pale light of early morning, I went with my father to survey the pier to see what exactly we needed to do. The place was large, stretching about 50 feet from the shoreline and about 400 feet long, with the storehouse smack dab in the middle of it. Our employers didn't want us to replace the pier or anything that large in scale. Just repair and update the storehouse and enough of the pier so that people could walk to and from the soon-to-be restaurant without fear of falling through rotting wooden planks. We still had our work cut out for us, but it wasn't going to be an impossible task. Clicking on our headlamps, my father told me he wanted me to check out the storehouse while he checked the pier itself, both the top and bottom. I had no desire to climb underneath the old structure and wade around in the water, so I happily agreed. Grabbing a notebook, pencil, multi-tool, respirator and measuring tape, I made my way cautiously over to the storehouse. While I'd been up to the storehouse before, when I was a teenager, looking for a hidden spot to smoke a joint, I did weigh a bit more than I did at 14, and each creak of the wood below my feet caused me to wince in anticipation of me crashing through into the water 15 feet below. However, I made it up to the storehouse without incident. And while I was relieved, I didn't drop my guard for an instant. As I said earlier, I'd been up to the storehouse before, but it was always at night, and I always just used it as a view obscura while I smoked a joint or drank some beer. This was the first time I got to actually look over the structure, and I have to admit that whoever built it was a very skilled carpenter. Even with age, its location near the water, and the many times it had to deal with harsh weather throughout the years, it stood proud and intact. Sure, whatever paint had been on it had eroded before I was even born, and the sign above the doorway had been eroded so much that any writing on it had disappeared. But what could you expect? A wooden building that was 100 feet long, 30 feet wide, and 15 feet tall was over 100 years old, still standing and having no structural issues was impressive. There was one thing that puzzled me, however. There were two entrances into the storehouse, one facing the shore and one facing the river. With modern building codes, we would have to build in at least two more exits, but that wasn't the strange thing. Each doorway had a chain that crossed it multiple times. The chains were attached to stakes driven into the wood besides the doorway, leaving no way to dislodge the chains except by removing the stakes from the wood. Looking closer at the chains, I noticed another odd aspect of them. I was expecting rusted iron chains, but the metal was blackened instead. Not what a normal rusted iron looks like. Thinking it over for a moment, I realized that the chains weren't rusted, but tarnished. These chains were made of silver. I called my father over, who had been slowly looking over the planks on top of the pier to measure out how much we needed to replace. He made his way over, and I showed him the chains on the door facing the shore. My father looked over the silver links and whistled. "Quite a find you got yourself there. We can bring them back to the shop, melt them down, and we'll make ourselves a pretty penny before the first payment gets to the bank account." He patted my shoulder and smiled. "I doubt the millers have seen this place in person yet, much less know the precious metal just hanging around for the taking." Now, I wasn't a superstitious man, and neither was anyone in my family, nor anyone I knew. But a little warning flag was going off in my head. Why do you think these chains are made of silver? Wouldn't regular iron chains be stronger and way less expensive? The smile vanished from my father's face as he thought a moment. Maybe it has something to do with why the pier closed all those years ago. People were a lot more superstitious back then, so it probably has to do with that. I frowned, knowing his explanation was more than likely right. But something still bothered me. Yeah, that's true. But still, silver chains seem a little bit excessive, if you know what I mean. Isn't silver used to ward off evil or something like that? The smile returned to my father's face. What, you think a werewolf or something is living in there? Come on, Caleb. You came down here to smoke and drink when you were in high school. I came down here to do the same, and I'm pretty sure your grandfather did the same. Out of all those times, did you feel something evil down here? Because I'll tell you, I sure as hell haven't. I have to admit that I hadn't. The plenty of times that I'd come down here, the situation seemed straight out of a horror movie, yet nothing had happened. I never felt sinister eyes watching me, or heard growls or whispers, or smelt death and decay or anything like that. My father turned and started walking back to where he'd left off. "Just take those chains off for today. We'll worry about the other door's chain some other day. Maybe we'll even get luckier and find something better in the storehouse." I nodded and turned my attention back to the stakes, buried into the wood and holding the silver links barricade in place. I went back to the truck we'd come in and grabbed a pry bar. It didn't take much effort to pry off the three stakes on the left side of the doorway, causing the chains to fall loosely to the right side and enabling the door to be opened inward. Putting on my respirator, I took note of the door's high-quality craftsmanship and made a note in my notebook that the employers might want to keep the door for aesthetic taste. Slipping the pry bar into my tool belt, I gripped the doorknob and opened the door. A loud creaking accompanied the first sunlight that had entered the storehouse in over a century. I had always wondered why this building never had windows. But I guessed if you were keeping trading goods in there, you wouldn't want an easy way for thieves to enter. I entered the ancient structure and took a look around. To my surprise, the place was stacked high with old shipping crates and wooden barrels. The place had been abandoned with a ton of goods in it. I was also thankful for my respirator, and there were layers upon layers of dust everywhere. And who knew what kind of mold and mildew was growing there as well. It was quite the sight to see, and I felt a sort of childlike giddiness that I was the first person to explore this town staple since its doors had been chained shut over 150 years ago. I closed the door behind me and slowly began to walk around, the aisles made up by the stacked cargo. I was also very cautious, as not only the ancient cargo crates might fall apart at the slightest touch, but the floor was far more likely to collapse with all this added weight on it. Even though I knew I had a job to do, it was hard to contain my excitement at exploring the place. Every couple of steps, I would stop and take a look at the crates and barrels, trying to use my headlamp to see if any of them contained labels of any sort. I was pretty sure there wasn't any food in here, even if I couldn't smell anything through my respirator, because rotten food would have reached the outside by then, and standing near the door, I had smelt nothing. My curiosity soon turned to boredom as I moved around the storehouse. I knew I wasn't allowed to open any of the crates or barrels, and it seemed like there was nothing in here but crates and barrels. The novelty was wearing off quickly, and I disappointingly went about doing the job I was sent in here to do. I began taking measurements and looked for any major damage to the floor or structure we'd have to deal with before beginning the restoration process. My father's business had decent insurance, but so far, we'd only had to use it once for Walter. Father prided himself on safety and client satisfaction, and as much of a pain in the ass that was to uphold, it was worth it. I was bent over, looking at some potential water damage in a corner of the building, when a sudden creak made me stand up at attention. It hadn't sounded like a creak of a wood settling, but more of something pressing weight on something wooden. Was I not alone in this storehouse? "Dad, are you in here?" I called out in the respirator. I know my voice was muffled, but if he was in the storehouse, he should have heard me easily enough. I got no response back. I waited for a couple more seconds before deciding it must have just been wood naturally setting, and went back to inspecting the corner. Another creak rang out sharply through the storehouse, and this time I stood back up and tried to look around with my headlamp. The sun was starting to rise outside, providing no light through the tiny openings in the wall and leaving me to rely on my headlamp to see anything. "Dad, if that's you, this isn't funny. Just let me know if you're in here or not," I called out again, mostly anger in my voice, though I couldn't help but let a tiny bit of fear out as well. There was no possible way there could be anyone else here other than me and my father. A tiny voice suddenly spoke out in the back of my mind. There's a reason the people here chain the door shut with silver. I shook that thought out of my head, but decided I wasn't going to get spooked by my father. I reached into my tool belt and grabbed the pry bar. "Dad, I'm warning you, I got my crowbar out. And if you scare me, I can't guarantee I won't whack you in the face with it," I called out again, only to hear nothing but silence in return. I knew then I wasn't going to let Dad make a fool out of me, and slowly began to search the storehouse for him. I felt a little exhilarated, stalking the aisles like a hunter in search of his prey. Dad rarely ever was the playful type, especially when it came to work. But I also knew he was an opportunist, and what better opportunity than this to scare your fully grown son and get a good laugh out of it. But I wasn't going to let him have his way in this maze of aged wood. I was going to teach him what a bad idea it was to try and scare a man who's got 5 inches and at least 25 more pounds of muscle on you. Of course, I wouldn't really hit him with a pry bar, but he didn't know that. As I got near another corner of the storehouse, I heard another creak. This one was much louder than before, but the sound made me freeze in place as I realized my mistake. The creak wasn't coming from the floor, like someone stepping on one of the old floorboards. The creak was coming from above, and was probably one of the many support beams over my head starting to give under pressure. I cursed my bad luck and frantically began to scan the ceiling, trying to see which beam was in danger of falling down and possibly bringing the whole ceiling down with it. Scanning the ceiling, the beam in question was easy to find, and what my headlamp illuminated made my blood run cold and the breath catch my throat. About 10 feet from me, laying across one of the thicker horizontal beams, was a creature. A monster I couldn't dream up of even in my worst nightmares. The body pale and shaped like a human, but must have been 7 feet long. Its skin was stretched tight across all the bones in its body, and black veins could be seen crisscrossing throughout it. Its feet were webbed, and the hands that topped each of its two long, spidery arms looked like two hands merged together. It was using two palms and 10 fingers on each hand to keep itself steady on the beam. The head was the worst thing about it. Thin, long hair hung down the sides of its face. It had no nose, with its eye sockets taking up about 2/3 of its face and the rest of it being a long, thin jaw. Despite how large the sockets were, the eyes seemed to be just two small pinpricks of yellow light shining in through an abysmally dark cavern. Its mouth was open, and it had no teeth. A long, grey tongue, no shorter than 2 feet, hung from its mouth. But it wasn't an ordinary tongue. The end of the tongue opened up into another tiny mouth, this one filled with nothing but needle-like teeth. For a few seconds, we just stared at one another. This thing didn't move out of surprise of being caught, and I didn't move out of seeing some spawn from the pits of hell not more than 10 feet away from me. At the end of those 10 seconds, the tongue twitched towards me slightly, and by instinct, I threw the pry bar at the beast with all of my might, turned on my heels, and ran as fast as I could away. A sickening crunch told me that my pry bar had hit its mark, but I wasn't going to stop for anything. Unfortunately, in my panic, I tried to turn a corner too quick and ended up colliding into a stack of crates. These crates came crashing down on top of me, pinning me to the ground and cracking my respirator and destroying my headlamp. I laid there in the utter dark for a few moments, stunned. A dull ache began to spread across my head and chest. The sound behind me made adrenaline course through my veins and clear my foggy mind in an instant. Behind me was the unmistakable sound of the floorboards creaking, mixed in with heavy breathing. Strength and purpose surged through me, and I burst forth from the fallen crates like a bat out of hell. Though I didn't have a light to guide my way, I generally remembered where I'd entered from, and I charged in that direction as fast as I could. Many times, I ended up slamming hard into the shipping barrels and boxes, but survival instinct had kicked in, and I recovered from those impacts instantly. I also think I was screaming, but I'm not completely sure. I made it to the door, for I could feel the outline of it in the doorway, but to my horror, there was no handle on the inside. How could I have missed that? I began feeling around in vain, trying to find some opening I could fit my hand through and pull the thing open. When I found nothing, I tried pushing the door, but it wouldn't move an inch. From the darkness behind me, I heard a rapid squeaking on the floorboards as the thing began to run at me from the darkness. It must have known I was at the door and had no plans on letting me escape. All of a sudden, the door was pushed inward, knocking me on my butt. Light flooded inward, and I could see the silhouette of my father standing in the doorway. "What the hell's going on in here?" he asked, but I didn't answer. I lunged for the open air, collapsing onto the pier in the light of the morning sun and thanking God I'd made it out of there alive. My father knelt by my side, and I guess I was more banged up than I thought, because Dad went pale at the sight of me. "Oh God, we have to get you to the hospital, now," he cried, wrapping one of my arms around his shoulder and lifting me from the ground. I didn't mind. I was just thankful to be in the light again. However, as he placed me in the passenger side of the truck and the world started fading fast as my eyes grew heavy, I noticed something in the rearview mirror that sent abject horror through my soul. The door to the storehouse was wide open. Before I could muster the strength to tell my father to close the door, I lost consciousness. I awoke in the hospital later. Apparently, I had a pretty nasty concussion and head wound from one of the old boxes falling on it. When I tried to tell the doctors, my father, anyone who would listen about the creature in the storehouse, I was told the head injury, like the one I got, could explain why I saw a monster in the storehouse. But I saw it before I was injured. I was scared to go home, and my fears were solidified when later that afternoon, Walter and Steve dropped by to drop off the broken respirator and pry bar they retrieved from the storehouse. They said they didn't find any monsters in there, but my respirator had been crushed completely, like someone stomped on it. And my pry bar had this black, sticky, viscous substance on one end, and they had no clue as to what it could be. I quit my father's business and moved downstate 2 weeks after the incident. On the surface, I told my dad that I was looking to expand my own horizons, and while I loved him, I needed a fresh change of pace. In truth, it was because I was afraid to be in my own hometown with that thing free. I don't know how old wood and chains managed to keep it locked in there for over 100 years, but it had worked. And now that it was out, I feared what it would do with its newfound freedom. I'm working for another contracting company about 70 miles south. It's not as good as my job with my dad's company, but I get by. I occasionally check in with my family, and everything seems to be going great. They finished remodeling the storehouse into a restaurant in the fall, and it's a pretty popular place. Life is looking up for the town. Well, that was until the winter. Throughout the times I called during the summer and fall, I found out from my conversations with Dad that some of his fisherman friends had been complaining. It seemed that in the later summer and fall that all the fish were disappearing from the river, and nobody had a clue why. When I called in December, my decision to get as far away from that river as I could was reaffirmed. It seems like all the fish and 3 local fishermen were making up the disappeared list. Checking online recently, that number of missing men has only tripled since then, with a mother and her baby added in too. We should have brought that building down on that beast's head when we had the chance.